this, my job says I'm doing this, I'm only doing this, or I only want to work this amount, or whatever the case may be. Because I come from an older mindset, an older generation. You said you could understand because you've been on both sides. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been on both sides, and I can't understand, I can't empathize with the younger generation, because I think it's important to start here. I think we have to give them grace, right? I think we have to approach this from an approach of understanding and empathy before we are quick to judge, right? Because there's no fault of theirs that they have been thrust into this society that is insanely reliant on technology, in this society that where information is at their fingertips, and there's are ways to make money and make a living in ways that they weren't before.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We're coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought provoking episode from a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters related to race, culture, and those little uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit. So we're excited about today's episode. We got a fantastic guest, but before we get started, we always want to pay homage to our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, whose mission is to save the Black family by first saving the Black man. So definitely check them out at Code M Magazine. That is codemmagazine.com. Two M's, codemmagazine.com. So, you know, one of the things about work today, especially with technology, the future of work is evolving fast, and adaptability, generational wisdom, and creative entrepreneurship are essential for success. Today, we're joined by Rodney Brown, co-founder of Barber Jean Productions, and he's coming to talk to us about bridging those generational gaps, navigating career shifts, and turning creative passions into a thriving business. So let me tell you a little bit about my brother, Rodney Brown Jr. Rodney Brown Jr. is a writer, producer, and director based in New York City and co-founder of Barber Jean Productions. His career began at Paramount and BET, but it was his passion for filmmaking that set him apart. With a background in management consulting for McKinsey & Company, Rodney blends creativity with analytical problem solving to help drive Barber Jean's production success. His short film, The Fruit It Bears, that came out in 2022, earned 4 major awards. It captivated audiences at the Pan-African Film Festival and caught the attention of BET and Revolt Media, which we're going to ask him about that later on. Rodney's journey from a reluctant high school actor to an award-winning filmmaker embodies his dedication to storytelling and innovation. Rodney Brown Jr., welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm truly honored to be here. And that's a heck of a bio, an intro that we got there. So well, I appreciate that.
Look, buddy, it's your background, right? I didn't make anything up. If you wanted me to, I could have, you know, said you were Scorsese's, you know, lost cousin. But I didn't do that, right? But your credentials speak for itself. So we're really excited for you to be here. And obviously, you're going to chat about something that the majority of Americans in the workforce struggle with, and that's that generational divide that we deal with. So we can't wait to hear your story and how you've seen success and learn more about Barber Jean Productions and how you guys are making a lot of things happen. But before we go into that, I would love to hear more about, tell us a little bit about where you're currently living and a little bit about your family.
Yeah, sure. So currently I'm living in Brooklyn, New York. Been up here for about 7 years, since 2018 or so. So I guess one could say I almost got my New York card. You know, I know they say that you're a transplant, you got to do 10 years before you can say you're a New Yorker, right? So
okay,
we almost there. But yeah, I'm a family. I come from the mother and beautiful mother and father, still married at 36 years. Father was a police officer at the Sheriff's Department down in Montgomery County, Maryland. My mother worked for the State Department for over 30 years as well. So very much come from Black family, also down in the suburbs with some old school traditional values, right? So, and then I have a sister who is the other half of Barbara Jean Productions. So it is she and I, and we come from the lovely Brown family, hailing all the way from the DMV, from Southern Maryland.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome. I never heard you had to be in the city 10 years before you got to the New York City card. So that's a new one on me. But hey, if that counts, you close. Do you win a prize? Or do you?
I guess it's pride. Right?
Is it a pride thing?
I don't know. You know, all right. But I'll tell you what, you don't have to be in New York City long in my book to earn your New York City card, because it'll introduce you to itself real fast.
Well, right? Here's the thing, though. A politician can move here in 2 years and all of a sudden run for mayor. That right. And then, you know, true. So I don't buy the 10-year thing. But regardless, man, we're excited that you're here. And thanks for giving us some insight in terms of your family and being from, you know, the Maryland area. Mm-hmm. Now, look, bro, you got a lot going on. You know, you have this production company that you've done. You're basically, and you're going to talk a little bit about all the work that you do, and you've made a lot of short films. It even took you a minute to get here because you were really, really busy and all the stuff you got going on, right? So why did you want to come on BEP to talk about this topic?
Yeah, so I think that, first off, this podcast is necessary, right? I think that the creating a space where we can have comfortable conversations in 2024 and 2025 is really important, because I think we've seen over the past year or 18 months or so, these conversations sort of tail off a little bit, right? Or some people be a little bit turned off by them. But I like the fact that this podcast encompasses all uncomfortable conversations, big, small, in between, doesn't matter. So I love that. And number two, I wanted to come on here because I felt as though that the topic that we're going to talk about today in regards to the workforce, generations, bridging the gap, creativity, entrepreneurism, and storytelling, I think that all of those things are really coming to the forefront of the workforce, the creative world, and just the dynamic of how we're existing with one another. And I think that it's reaching a critical point to whereas both sides or all generations need to sort of come together and get some understanding as to why, the why behind the what, I guess you could say.
Right, right. Well, look, man, I'm excited you're here. Thanks for that. You ready to talk about it, my brother?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about it. So let's back up a little bit, man. South Maryland, you came here. Tell us a little bit, you know, before you got, because I'm hearing, you know, reluctant high school actor. So talk a little bit about that. And then, you know, obviously how you got into the production side.
Yeah, for sure. So, again, from Southern Maryland, so very much the suburbs. So where I was from is a vast, stark difference from New York City, right? So a little bit of a shock to the frequency at which life is in New York City. But where I was from, you know, I grew up playing sports. My sister and I, we played basketball. We took the school bus. And I just remember my dad always telling me, you know, one day that school bus is going to come by and you ain't going to have to get on it. And as a kid, you know, that didn't really mean much, but that day sure enough came, right? So how the acting thing sort of came about was when I was in high school, I was a basketball player. I ran track, played basketball, and I was pretty good. And what happened was I had gotten hurt my junior year. And in addition to that, I had brought home a C on my interim report.
When you say you got hurt, like how did you get hurt?
Yeah, so I decided I wanted to play football. So I was a basketball star, I guess you could say. And then if you had the football guys over here, and you know, they like to talk trash to the basketball guys and what have you. So, you know, the football guys, they would come try out for the basketball team. So I said, all right, I'm going to come play football. And I was pretty good, but the problem was the change in terrain from going from hardwood to a soft turf field was giving me tendonitis, was giving me knee issues. So as a result, I was unable to play basketball that season. I could have stayed on the team, but I didn't want to take up a spot and not be able to play. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to run indoor track when I'm healthy and outdoor track in the spring. And just get my strength and conditioning up on my legs.
Got it.
So I had brought home a C on my progress report, and it was in theater arts. And in my household, you were not allowed to bring home Cs. So my dad sees this, and he said, well, this is unacceptable, especially in theater arts. I could see if this was math or science. So I go to my theater arts teacher, and I say, hey, Mr. Minor, yeah, this isn't going to work. And he says, well, how about this? Why don't you come to auditions? I said, Mr. Minor, I can't come to auditions. I have basketball practice, or I have track practice. He said, well, I guess he was just going to have a C then. So naturally, I went to auditions and he keeps calling me back over and over again. I'm checking the board. I'm going to school. Why is my name still being here week after week? And he ultimately gives me the main part. And that part is Macbeth.
Wow.
I did not know who I knew who Shakespeare was. But wasn't familiar with the ins and outs of Macbeth or with anything else he had written. So that was an amazing experience. So I killed it, at least as far as the audience is concerned. And, you know, it was funny. I had my friends in the front row trying to make me laugh and what have you. And so from there, that has really sparked my interest into acting and into movies. And from there, that is when my sister got involved in it as well, because she loved music. And she had a camera and she was shooting music videos, you know, young, 18, 17 years old, just having fun with a camera. And so from there, that, looking back, that I think that was the spark for both of us that said, hey, you know what, maybe we can do this. And then we had parents who really believed in us.
Right.
And really said, hey, you can do whatever you want. World is your oyster. Go chase your dreams. And that's how it started.
Buddy, so number one, the teacher saw something in you.
Think so? I think he was trying to sell some tickets.
So to give you the thing, Macbeth, so how was he trying to sell tickets?
Because
there must be some more of the story that I don't know about.
I knew a lot of people in the school.
But to do that, to play that character, though?
Yeah.
That's not easy.
I think some of the other thespians were a little upset.
Okay, think about it for a second. I played Martin Luther King Jr., right? When I was in the, sixth grade or something of that nature, right?
Not bad.
It was 3-4 lines.
Yes,
right? I didn't have to, I didn't have to practice. I didn't have to play Macbeth.
Yeah.
That's not really anybody gets that. All right. Yeah. And so number one, he had to, and again, I just based on the story, mm-hmm. had to see something in you. Number two, you said you killed it, right? Because evidently you must have put some effort into it.
I did.
Right? And you practiced because you didn't want to, if your parents, as you're telling us, they didn't accept the C. So in other words, they didn't accept anything half-ass.
That's true.
Right? So then that means when you said, okay, I'll do it, you put in 100% and you kicked butt.
I did. I did. I was up all night rehearsing my lines. I was going to the other actors' houses and making sure I had my lines right. And I put a lot into it and, didn't really think much of it at the time. But to your point, yeah, maybe he did see something, and here we are now. I think that was the beginning of this sort of storytelling journey that I went on.
Wow, buddy. Mind if I tell you this quick story? I saw this on the thing? It comes on BET or I forget. They do a little backstory of an actor or an actress or a musician. I forget what it's called, but they had Leon. Do you know who Leon is? They did his backstory. He played David Ruffin, Temptation.
Okay.
You've seen Lean On in 1,000 movies. Okay. Net. Reason I'm telling you the story, because it's similar to yours. He got recruited. He's from New York. He got recruited. He got a scholarship, I think, to play basketball out in California. Okay? He was on the basketball team, college.
Got it.
Okay? And all of a sudden, a guy came up to him on the campus and said, hey, man. He said, you should check out this acting thing, this class, this drama. So he went and checked it out, but he wasn't interested in it, right? And then he said, like, his second year, this dude ran up to him and said, look, man, we want you to be in this play. Hmm. And he was like, I'm not interested. I don't know nothing about this. They said, you ain't got to. We've been watching you, okay? And then he went and he got the bug, okay, just like you. Now, something he wasn't even thinking about. And then the moral of the story, he had a big play that he was going to do on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the coach to say, hey, I got this film or this play that I need to do. We have a game. Can I miss the game? And the coach said to him, if you don't show up for this game, you're off the team. And he looked and said, I'm off the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he left and looked, and it took his career. And he said he saw that coach years later and the coach apologized.
Mm.
And said he should have been, and this kind of fits in terms of our generational stuff, he should have been more flexible with his students, with his players, knowing that they had other gifts and talents, right? So that's why I love your story, because obviously old dude must have saw something into you.
Yeah. Now, I actually appreciate you sharing that. That's actually something that I actually want to watch now, because there's a lot of parallels in that. And that's actually pretty deep, because to your point, the generations, you know, the coach is looking at it from his perspective. And he's like, hey, look, like, if you want to do this and you want to be a professional, then you need to be here. You can't miss a game.
Old school coach.
Exactly.
All right. Right. New school dude.
Mm-hmm. And then now, you know, life is a little bit more nuanced than that. You know what I mean? You, two things can be true, right? Or you can look at it from another perspective and say, hey, well, if this is calling you, then maybe you should answer that call.
Excellent point, yeah. Bro. So tell me, how did that seed that was planted, how did it take you to the next level?
Well, I think that it started with us being able to move to New York City, right? The seed was planted years before we moved there. And we started with shooting content with the people who are around us, right? Long before we wrote a script, long before we even shot a movie. It started with our family, our cousins, our friends, and what have you. So we started with a musician who's our cousin, started filming his music videos. He launched a nonprofit organization, so we started filming the kids and what have you. And then we eventually moved up to New York City. My sister was able to get a job at Viacom. I was able to get a job at Viacom as well. And that's sort of what made us open our eyes to see what's possible, because we were exposed to the conglomerate that is Viacom, CBS, Paramount. And we were exposed to the vast city of New York, where it's filled with creatives and entrepreneurs and people from all walks of life. So coming up here, I think, was really what opened our eyes, because we come from a small town down in Maryland where a lot of folks are either just military, you're working with the federal, state, or local government, or you're working blue-collar jobs, which is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But just as far as opportunity is concerned, there was a lot more of it up in New York City, and I think that's what sort of made us expand and sort of and bloom and blossom.
Funny, that is so. And so that's an important, and thanks for sharing that. That's important, right? You want to be something, but if there's not a lot of opportunity in your neighborhood, in your environment, it's hard for you to do that. You have to go somewhere else, right? And yeah. Hearing that you guys came up and got a job at Viacom, which is awesome. But that, again, going back to the Macbeth thing, that seed definitely kind of, it didn't go away, mm-hmm. right? And then doing the things with your cousins and stuff to that nature, right? So let me ask you this, though. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I just turned the ripe age of 30 years old.
So you're 30. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now you're... You're coming into the big city. Like, what was my girl Alicia Keys says? In New York.
Yep. Yep.
Which Conscious is so jungle. True. So true, right? So you come to New York, you get a job, you got a big company, Viacom, okay? Television, movies, the whole nine yards, mm-hmm. advertising, everything you can think of, right? Yep. You're 20-something years old. Now you're in a company that you have baby boomers, you have Generation X, you have millennials, you have every, you know, I think this is the only, I could be wrong, but I thought this was the one of the few times, this is the time where we think we have five generations all at the same time in the workforce,
mm-hmm.
okay? Talk a little bit about that experience, right? Coming up, getting a job, you know, and then you are, what's your Generation Z?
I am a millennial.
Millennial. Mm-hmm. So you're a millennial. Now you're in the office with baby boomers and all that type of, they have different mindsets.
Yeah.
Millennials have different mindsets. Talk a little bit about that.
I think the best way to answer this question is to really lay out the time frame. So I started out in 2016 to 2018 down in Washington, D.C., Department of Justice, what have you. And then I came up here 2018 through about 2020 is when I was working at Viacom and in the media, entertainment, digital ad space industry, right? And we were working with a variety of generations, I guess you could say. So I think what the biggest thing that sort of jumped off the paper for me was I was working with older executives. I was working with folks who were, I don't know, maybe in their 50s or older, and I was half of their age.
Correct.
Working as their assistant. And it was interesting to me seeing how they were in this position and they had trouble figuring out how to send their email, right? But as a young kid, you don't really quite understand that their value is not in the Gmail or Outlook inbox, right? Of course they know how to send an email or structure an email, right? Their value is in the experience, the relationships, and what have you. And then as my career went on, I started to notice that the people who are around my age group and older didn't struggle as much with doing things that they were asked to do, even though they didn't want to. And the folks who were a little bit younger than I was were sort of struggling to justify why they should do things that may not be outside their job description. Now, the biggest thing that I noticed was that folks a little bit younger than me, maybe I don't want to really put a number on it, but they are not afraid to pull that job description card. Where I come from, you never pull that job description card unless it is, I mean, it's been going on for months. This is out of control. They're taking advantage of you. You're not getting, like, I mean, it has to be really bad for you to have that conversation. And you better not have that conversation within the first year. So I'm sort of in the middle of this, right? Where my generation understands both sides. So working in those environments was really, really interesting to see how much pushback some of the younger folks would give and how the older folks or the folks in the positions of leadership couldn't quite understand why that the younger folks had this position. So I think that I'm in a unique spot to be able to understand both sides of the equation.
Right.
And I think that that was just a really interesting dynamic to have witnessed.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
You know, so number one, thanks for that, my friend. And you say something that we've all struggled with. And to be fair, you're only 30 years old. And I say only, not as disparaging. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're 30. You're on the lower rung of being a millennial, right?
Well, yeah, I'm closer to being Gen Z.
Correct. Right. Because I'm a baby boomer, right? And it went from 44 to 64. I was born in 64, right? So I'm at the back end of it, right? So a couple of things I wanted to say is that, you know, that has been a struggle because I think one of the reasons why, well, there's multiple reasons. And let me just say this. Let's back up. Number one, it's not an anomaly. Okay. When I was a kid, when I was 6 years old, my grandmother was telling me how soft we were. All right. And what they did earlier when they were a kid and they would run circles around us and how they carry two pails of water 3 miles and
uphill,
all that type of stuff. So that's not every generation does that, right? It's not something. And then when you get older, you're going to be telling your kids something similar, right? The challenge is having all these generations in the workforce. And more importantly, the mindsets that go with them. Okay. And you just gave two great examples, right? You know, there's a mindset of, you know, this ain't my job description, right? And I can't believe this and that. And then there's a mindset, you ain't even got a right to even bring that up. You're supposed to be just working hard and hoping that you get noticed.
Exactly.
Okay. And so, so when you have those two different mindsets, and there's others in the middle too, as well, it causes friction. Okay. And so talk a little bit, because I want to make it parallel to what you're doing, because obviously with Barbara Jean Productions, you're, you know, doing stuff and building stuff with all different type of people, right? Who are older, younger, in between, okay? And have those different type of mindsets. And you got to be able to navigate that in a very diplomatic way to be able to become successful. So, you know, one of the things is when I was, you know, I've been in leadership at a lot of places I've been, right? And I've always struggled with those individuals that, you know, would come in and my job says I'm doing this, I'm only doing this, or I only want to work this amount, or whatever the case may be, because I come from an older mindset, an older generation. You said you could understand because you've been on both sides. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I have been on both sides, and I can't understand, I can't empathize with the younger generation, because I think it's important to start here. I think we have to give them grace, right? I think we have to approach this from an approach of understanding and empathy, before we are quick to judge, right? Because there's no fault to their, it's no fault of theirs that they have been thrust into this society that is insanely reliant on technology, in this society that where information is at their fingertips, and there's are ways to make money and make a living in ways that there weren't before. So we have to first understand that these younger workers, well, they may not be as technically savvy in certain areas, but they are, they do know a little bit more about, I guess you could say, no, they do, they are a little bit more comfortable speaking up about what they are and are not comfortable doing.
And I think they're more technically savvy
than
the older people, right?
Yeah,
just to
I
be fair,
agree.
Right?
I
go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think it's important to just lay that out there first and understand that they'd had an entirely different upbringing than we have before we are quick to judge them. But I think I can empathize with them because there are moments and there are times where we see things that are not right. We know that they shouldn't be doing this. We know that they are underpaid. We know that they are overworked. We know that they are undervalued. But so it's like, I understand that. I understand that. So that, but that's almost as far as it goes, right? It's like, I can understand how you feel. However, you still need to do this. However, you still need to do that. And that is where I think that my father's values, my grandfather's values have been instilled in me. And that's when those are active. Because discipline is doing what you don't want to do, but do it like you love it. Or doing the things that need to be done when no one's watching. Or doing the right thing. These things are instilled in me. And I think that is why I can empathize and understand with that side, but I'm still gonna go this way.
Right.
Yes, I can be upset. Yes, I can and think that I shouldn't have to do this, or I shouldn't be doing this, or I'm not valued, but I'm gonna do it. Right. So to answer your question succinctly is the fact that they've been exposed to a lot of things, and I have as well, allows me to empathize with them, but me personally, I'm going to go the other.
Yeah, I think so. Number one, first thing you said, I totally agree. We're quick to judge. I told you, my grandmother, you guys soft, right? Mm-hmm. And that was years ago, okay? And we're quick to always think our generation is better than the rest, okay? So that's human nature and always will be there. The thing is that, you know, we have to be willing. So let me say it this way. You know, progress is always, in other words, pushing the envelope is always by newer generation, the younger generation, okay? And that's important. It's no different when we went from the 50s to the 60s, okay? Where the 50s mentality was, you know, God, country, and whatever somebody do, you do, and you wear your hair this way, and you walk this way, and you say this. And to the 60s, where they were like, forget that. I'm going to wear my hair long. I'm going to do this. I'm pushing back on authority. The whole nine yards. That's always been the case. And when we look back at, now, when that was happening, they're like, they're insane. they're undisciplined. Yeah, yeah. They're lost their mind, right? But then when we look back, no, because they pushed us ahead. And they were seeing things that we didn't see. Because remember, it's an old saying, pigs don't know pigs stink, right? When you're in the pig pen, everything is normal. When you get out of the pig pen, first thing you say is that funky smell, right? Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is, I get that, mm-hmm. right? The challenge is that, and I want to ask you this question, being 30, you're saying, hey man, I see both sides, mm-hmm. okay? Here's the thing though, is that talk a little bit of why you see both sides. Okay. And then one of the things that you chatted about, me and you talked a couple of weeks ago, and you said about how adaptable you are. Mm-hmm. Right. So speak a little bit when you say adaptable, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, how can we bridge this us versus them in the workforce and look at the strengths that each generation brings and really try to lean on those strengths?
Yeah, yeah. So to answer the first question again, how I can see both sides, and I think it really just comes down to me being exposed to both, right? When I first graduated college, I was working for the United States Department of Justice, particularly the United States Marshals. So I was very much working in an environment that was, people were older than me. I was the only young person in the building. I was 23 years old, right? The next person closest to my age was probably 7 years older than me. It was probably around the age that I am now. So being raised with parents like that and being thrust into that environment after straight after college taught me one way. It taught me, hey, like, you're working with police officers, federal police officers at that, who are going to need to do, are going to do what needs to be done point blank period, because they are the only ones who are going to do the job. So that's how they approach everything that they do. That's what I was first exposed to. And then after that, you know, going to a little bit more elusive an environment, right? The entertainment industry, I got a chance to see why other people, I got a chance to see how the other generation was acting, or the people who younger than me, the acting. And I got a chance to be in those outside of the conference room at the lunch table and hear their reasonings behind why they felt the way that they felt and get their side of the equation.
But you just said something that's key.
What's that?
Repeat what you just got finished saying. You said you were able to listen.
Yeah.
To what their points of view.
Yes. Right? I was able to listen objectively because I'm not their manager. I'm not their leader. I'm not necessarily their peer either. I'm just a little bit older and maybe one position higher than them. So I listen from a source of curiosity, like I said. That allowed me to empathize and understand with them. Because if you listen, what they're asking for is not insane. They're asking for maybe to be respected, maybe to not be name called, maybe to not be contacted after work hours, maybe to have constructive criticism. So a lot of the things that they're asking for are not outside of the realm of possibility and are not insane. And to answer your second question, the second question was...
So you being adaptable.
Right. And me being adaptable, I think that comes from straight up how I was raised and me just the time. I think I was at the tail end of the millennial generation where I was exposed to a world that internet was, yeah, you better go home and use dial-up to, I can pull it out on my phone in my college class and Google something, right? So I very much had to exist in both worlds where... The internet is a thing that is doesn't really exist yet, and I ended up existed in a world where the internet is everything. But and you did too. But I think what's important from what makes my perspective unique is the time frame and how old I was going through these transitions, because I had to go throughout high school and most of college and all of my first jobs. There, I mean, yeah, we had phones, but I mean, they were not used in the way that they were today. They were used for phone calls and maybe texts. But the texts then were two or three words. You know, we weren't texting for conversation. Then we were texting for emergency almost, really. So I had to grow up in a world where you don't have your phone to escape to when you don't want to pay attention. You don't have your phone to pull out when you want to Google an answer. You don't have ChatGPT. You don't have any of these things. You have to go to the actual library. I didn't have a laptop. So I understand the older generation and I understand the youngers because I was able to do both, right? So that's, I think, what makes me really, really adaptable, and also just how I was raised. You know, I was raised in a household where there is no excuses. This is no holds bar. Like, I don't care how you feel. You're going to school. You're going to get your work done. You're going to do this. Point blank, period, full stop, because I said so.
Right.
That's how I was raised. So that's what I really think makes me adaptable. And secondly, working in a variety of different industries. I've sold cars for CarMax for years. I've worked in retail. I've worked for Nordstrom. I've worked for Yelp. I have sold solar panels. I have led productions for Moose short films, commercials, branded content. I have done a lot of different things. So I think that's also what allows me to go in any environment and listen more, talk second, and always create value in it.
What do you think holds people back from moving forward when it comes to this conversation, this issue? Because, again, we have these multiple generations in the workforce. All individuals bring a certain level of talent, certain level of intellect. It's, you know, again, you know, from a baby boomer, I could say, this is the way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And then from a millennial or Gen Z, they could say, well, wait a minute, this is the way to do it. And two things can be right at the same time. So what do you think holds people back from being able to be open and learn from this and be successful and move forward?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that the answer really comes down to, well, what do you then that? And once you answer that, then I think you can really answer the question. Because if the answer is, say you're working in a service industry job, say you're a barista or a bartender or a waiter or what have you, and you're frustrated with what's going on. Before I can give you any advice, before I can say what the next best step is you have to answer the question, what do you want? Because if the answer is just, hey, I want to pay my bills and I just want to make enough money to get by and know that I'm going to go to work tomorrow and my boss isn't going to fire me? That's the answer, then yeah, buddy, you're going to have to do some things that you don't want. But if the answer is, hey, I'm just here until I can save enough money to do A or B or C or D, then I'm going to have a different piece of advice for you, you know? So that is really how I would answer that question. But at the end of the day, net, net, you're going to have to do things that you don't want to do in order to be where you want to be. Because if you continue to do the things that you've always done, you will continue to get the same results and you will be where you always have been. So it really depends on what you want out of life or what you want out of that current job or that situation. But I will tell you, but I will close with this. You always have to do more than you think. And that's just the reality.
And so when you say, you know, and I love what you said, you know, you got to analyze what do you want. And you then, you know, based on what you want, if you want the higher things, then you got to be willing to do what it takes. Who are you talking to? Are you talking to everybody? Are you talking to a certain generation?
I think I'm talking to everybody. I'm talking to everybody because I haven't been, you know, again, I'm only 30 and I can only go from the experience that I have, that I have. And as I keep going, I notice the difference between people. And I notice how, and maybe it's less a generation thing and maybe it's just a people thing, you know? And the reason I made it a generational thing is because, I mean, we've seen so many headlines over the past couple of years about, oh, Gen Z this, Gen Z that, they're lazy, they don't want to work, they're entitled, they're this or they're that. But in the end, I really just do think that it is in you. And it can be taught. It can be learned, right?
Well, but I think you said a few things, buddy, that, you know, stood out. And you said about how your parents brought you up, okay? And how they set an expectation that you are going to have to work hard, you're going to do whatever it takes. And that goes even when you even talked about school. A C wasn't, you know, they wasn't satisfied with a C in your house. You couldn't bring that, right? And, you know, being able, having that type of mindset to understand that, you know, regardless of the technology around you, you would have to come in and work hard. So, buddy, tell me a little bit about Barber Gene Productions, mm-hmm. how you guys built it. You know, you won a couple awards. You did a movie. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Barber Gene Productions started again about 10 years ago with my passion with acting, which happened in high school, and my sister with filming music videos with our cousins and what have you. And I think that what made us successful in the small amount of work that we were able to do was our emphasis on storytelling, was our laser focus on what is the audience thinking? What do we want them to walk away from this piece of content with? Because they gave us their time, right? Whether it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, we want to not really teach them something, but we want to make them feel something. So we put a lot of effort into pre-production. What are we trying to say? Who are we trying to say it to? Who is our demographic? Where is this going to live? How long do we want the shelf life for this film to be, right? And I think that a way that you can do that, a lot of way through storytelling, is having your character make decisions. When they make decisions, that has a lot to do with who they are, right? Or showing, not telling, right? Instead of saying, hey, remember when we used to do this? Why don't you show? Maybe you can show a flashback of them. Maybe you can show a picture within the house of them at the beach instead of them telling you, hey, we used to go to the beach.
Right.
Those are small things that you can do. And then lastly is giving your audience more credit. The audience oftentimes is a lot smarter than we think. So you don't have to spoon feed them information. You can let them figure out things on their own. And I think when you do that, you'll be surprised at the reaction that you get from the audience.
Got it. So you seem like you really enjoy this, my man, right? So give me a little bit in terms of, like, what was the best movie that you've seen that the story resonated with, where it didn't leave you? And then from there, what lessons did you learn from that and how do you apply moving forward?
Man, that's a tough question. I always struggle when I'm asked what my favorite movie is or what the most powerful movie is I watched. And I guess off the top of my head, I would probably have to say, I don't have one movie or one movie that I can point to. But I think that a lot of the ones that come to mind are movies that I watched in my childhood, because those movies I think are timeless, because they teach you. The values and morals of just being a good person, doing the right thing, making the right decisions. So I can't really answer what the best movie or the is or what moved me the most. You know why, Tony? Because I'm going to make that movie. I'm going to make that movie.
Oh, I get. Well, look, and I get that, right? Because like you, I like so many different movies. I enjoy them. They all speak to me. I was just, the reason I asked the question is because, you know, you talked about the different ways or the different components to a story and about the audience smarter than you think and the whole nine yards. And, you know, one of the things that always, when I know I watch something really good and I saw a good story, it didn't leave me. I would think about it. Even when I went to bed that night, I would think about that story. When I woke up the next day, I would think about that, right? And even if it wasn't something in my wheelhouse, just in terms of the characters and what happened in the story, right? So that's why I was asking you the question. Because, and you tell me, one of the stories about making that emotional connection, correct? Right?
100%.
And trying to garner, make people feel that they're in the movie or they feel the pain or the exuberance of what the character is going through. Talk a little bit about the movie that you guys made that, you know, you won an award with, right? You talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So the first movie that I had actually written alongside my sister was called The Fruit It Bears. And it was a love story about a young 25-year-old couple in New York City. And really, the crux of the story was the gentleman in the story felt as though that, hey, we can't be who we need to be together. Right, I can't be who I want to be and need to be, and neither can you. And he convinced himself of that and blamed it on the other person as opposed to taking a look inside and saying, okay, well, what can I do as opposed to what can't I do? And I think what made that movie successful was our goal was to pull at the heartstrings, right? So people often ask me, hey, so this is your story, right? This is your breakup story. And I'm like, no, this is your story. This is my mother's story. This is my father's story. This is my sister's story. So how we like to write characters is, We'll take one and say, okay, this is where we want to go, right? But when I said earlier that we like to break the rules, this is what I mean. Because this character, this is a fictional story. You're allowed to pull from wherever you need to pull to tell a compelling narrative, right? So I pull from everybody in my life. I pull from every movie that I've ever seen to bring together this character that is a full-fledged, fully functioning person that you can relate to, right? And that's how I think that we do it. And we with the goal of, like I said, you walking away from the theater and you said the stories that stick with you have you asking this. I think that we had that in our mind when we wrote it and when we made it. And I think that is what made us successful because everybody could see themselves in that story. Whether you were 8, I remember saying this to my production team. Hey, whether you are 8 or 80, I don't care. When you watch this movie, you're going to take something away from it with you. And we have that goal with every piece of content that we make. And I think that that is a real difference.
What separates Barbara Jean Productions from everybody?
What separates us is our mission to motivate, educate, and inspire. No matter what we're doing, whether it's a corporate event, whether it's for an event for a charter school, or whether we're doing branded content, or whether we're doing a short film, the work that we take on is always mission-driven. And we want to visually show people and make them feel something, even if it's just a commercial or even if it's just a product, right? So what sets us apart is we're always going to go above and beyond for you, for our clients. And what we understand is we are doing work for our clients and we are doing what our client wants, right? We are delivering what you want. It goes back to giving them more credit. The client knows what they want. They knows what works for them. They know what they want to do. If they asked you for your creative direction, we're more than happy to provide it. What we're going to do is we're going to show up on time. We're going to be respectful. And we're going to give you a quality product. We're going to underpromise and we're going to overdeliver. And guess what? You got a brother and sister duo. What company, what production company you can hire where the brother and sister show up on set ready to deliver delivering a line on your vision? That's what makes us different.
That is awesome, my man. So talk to us a little bit about what's in store for the future.
For the future, so we see scaling Barbara Jean Productions. Our goal was to always make a feature-length film. We got very close to doing it with BET during the film strike, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But we want to be a full-fledged production company. I always pictured myself being the executive with the suit on, going in and getting the deal done. Now that can still happen. And we want to do this on the production standpoint. So full service end-to-end production, whether you want to start a podcast, you want to produce it, you need a copy for it, you need an editor for it, or you want to go do a feature-length film, or you just want to do a photo shoot, or maybe you want to do some branded content. That is ultimately the goal, and that is what we're going to do. We have a goal of $500,000 this year, and I think we are well on our way to doing that.
That is awesome, buddy.
Yeah.
So any upcoming movies, anything?
Yes, we have another movie upcoming, and it's called I Deleted the App. And yeah, I think you're going to like this one. It is about, you know, it's kind of a reality now, but it's about, like, if they had a detox center, but in real life, right? So say, Tony, say you're addicted to...
A detox center for what? Go ahead.
So say you're addicted to, I don't know, Dr. Pimple Popper. Or you're addicted to car videos, right? And you got somebody, you say, hey, Tony, look, man, like, you spend a lot of time on that daggone phone, and I think that we need to get you some help. So you go to this AA-style detox center, but it's for digital media or what have you, or social media. You're going to sit in a little circle, and then they're going to encourage you to go, I don't know, touch some grass, or maybe go for a walk, or maybe read a book instead. You know, so it's very silly. You know, we're trying to make fun of ourselves, but it also is sending a message like, hey, guys, a lot of fulfillment you can come out of life is not going to come in this black box, right?
No, no question. And look, I can imagine, you know, when you said the title, you know, initially everybody or immediately everybody would be like, oh, that must be for younger people. You kidding me? Right? There's older people that's addicted to TikTok or Facebook mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be, right? So I can't wait for that to come out. When will that launch, my brother?
Yeah, I think we can expect to see that in mid to late spring.
Okay.
So before June, but not before April, I can tell you that. So probably mid to late April to late May.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to when that comes out. We'd love to have you come back on and share it with us.
Oh, I'd love to.
Right? Because that sounds intriguing. Look, my man, I got to give you a lot of credit, you know, for a young brother. You got your head on right. Your parents did a fantastic job bringing you up. More importantly, you and your, I met your sister. You guys were very receptive of it because the way you carry yourself, that foundation is there. And so you said you have a goal of 500,000. There's no question you guys are going to hit that more. You guys are just scratching the surface of your greatness. So we really appreciate you coming on A Black Executive Perspective. We're going to be doing more things in 2025 together. So I'm excited about that and tapping into that storytelling realm that you and Barbara Jean Productions bring. So final thoughts, my brother. What do you want to leave the audience?
Well, what I want to leave the audience with is a couple of things. And the first thing is if I could encourage you all to be solution oriented. I don't care how old you are. I don't care if that's with your workforce, if that's with your relationship, with your family members. Maybe it's a romantic relationship. I encourage you to be solution oriented because as I enter, you know, sort of middle management, you know, getting towards the 10-year mark of work experience and even experience with my production company, too, because I've had the luxury of leading a team of 10, 20, 30 people on a production shoot. I've had the luxury of leading a team in the workforce also. So I'm exposed now more than ever to the people who stand out the most to me are the people who come to me and they don't say, hey, Rodney, the coffee mug broke, and then just stop talking. You know what I mean? Like, as a leader, you know this. Everyone comes to you with problems. But the ones that have earned your trust and the ones that you respect the most as far as this getting something done, it's the ones that come to you and they say, hey, Tony, here's what happened. Here's what I suggest we do about it. Here's why. Here's the potential implications of what we're suggesting. Here's the ramifications. Here's the risks. What do you think?
Right.
And you tell me what to prioritize.
Right.
That is the person that I'm sure that you like to work with. Right. And the second thing that I would say is life doesn't happen on a calendar. I don't care how many emails you send, how many Zoom calls you attend. Yes, networking is important. All of that is important. I'm sure you got a lot of stuff scratched off your task list. But at the end of the day, first impressions matter. A lot of those happen in real life. A lot of the people who are going to change your life are people who you are going to meet in person because there is no energy exchanged through that keyboard or through that screen. Right. And I think I wish that somebody had told me that a while ago because, you know, sometimes you're just comfortable, man. You know, you're going to work, you're in a routine. You don't want to go to that dinner. You don't want to go to that conference. You don't want to go to that seminar. You don't want to go to that mixer. You don't want to go to that networking event. So especially when you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're in the creative field, if you're trying to grow your career, man, life does not happen on the couch. And lastly, I would just say, just do the next best thing. You don't have to have it all planned out. I think oftentimes a lot of people get caught up in having everything planned and mapped out. Everything needs to be, my T's need to be crossed and my I's need to be dotted for me to launch. But life does not work that way. Sometimes you just have to throw yourself out to the universe and build the plane as you fly it. And I always say life opens up when you do. And the best things in life are on the other side of fear. This may sound cliche, this may sound corny, but really just sit down and think about some of the things that you really want to do. Sit at the edge of your bed one day and think about, what am I doing? What do I really want to do? And I guarantee you, some of those cliches that I just said, you're going to be running them in your mind. And I promise you, you're going to come up with some answers.
Buddy, it is so true. And those are great final thoughts, my brother. So thank you, man. So final question I have for you. How can BEP help you, my brother?
I'm glad you asked. How you can help is continuing to do this, right? Because I know that we're in 2025 now, and there's all kinds of conversation going on about whether these conversations need to still be going. But the answer is yes, they do, because we're here to have uncomfortable conversations. That can be about anything, and that never needs to go away. So I would encourage you guys to keep doing what you're doing, and I want to see you on the road. I want to see you at conferences. I want to see you at live events. I want to see people stumbling upon your podcast in person and say, hey, I'd love to come on here and share something with you. That's what I want to see. And I would love to see this platform grow. I want to see weekly segments, because I think that it is important now more than ever. We're past the George Floyd economy. We're past 2020. We're past all of that. These conversations need to keep going. And I think this is a perfect place for it. So I think you guys are doing great. And I would love to see us get on the road and explain the platform.
Well, thank you, my brother. And challenge accepted. So appreciate that. We're going to make it happen. We loved you today. Your energy, your intellect, your maturity, your leadership, creativity has all been shown here today on this episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast. So, buddy, we can't wait to continue to engage with you throughout the rest of the year. And we're going to ask you to stay put right now, because we're going to have you help us with our call to action. So I think it's now time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And so the tidbit today is, generations don't divide us. Perspective does. When we listen, learn, and lead with purpose, we open our minds and create endless opportunity. And you heard a lot of that from Rodney Brown Jr. So, one, a quick little reminder, don't forget to check out every Thursday on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, Need to Know by Dr. Nasinga Burton. Dr. Burton dives into the timely and crucial topics that happen on a daily basis that you don't have time to delve into. So she brings all the fire and the energy and what you need to know to move forward. So Need to Know by Dr. Nasinga Burton every Thursday on a Black Executive Perspective podcast. And don't forget to check out Pull Up, Speak Up, our roundtable that sits down and talk about the crucial topics, the everyday things that's happening. And it's a place where all voices matter, perspectives are gained, and more importantly, a revolution is going on. So make sure you check out Pull Up, Speak Up. Now, as our people who watch a Black Executive Perspective podcast, as you know, our goal, our mission is to decrease all forms of racism. And the way we do that is with the acronym we call LESS, L-E-S-S. Our brother here, the co-founder of Barbara Jean Productions, Rodney Brown Jr. is going to help us with our call to action. Rodney, kick us off, my brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So for LESS, the first L in LESS is going to stand for learn. Educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances.
Absolutely. And then after you learn and you've enlightened yourself, the next letter stands for E, which is empathy. Now, since you understand more about what your brothers and sisters are going through, now you can be more empathetic to their problems and situations, since you put yourself in their shoes.
And the next S stands for share. Share your insights to enlighten others.
Absolutely. And then after you share, the final S stands for stop. You wanna, we wanna all stop discrimination as it walks in our path. So if Aunt Jenny says something at the Sunday dinner table that's inappropriate, you say, Aunt Jenny, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate LESS, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fairer, more understanding world. And the key is we all will be able to see the change that we want to see, because LESS will become more. Don't forget to continue to follow A Black Executive Perspective on all platforms, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to come to our website, sign up for our newsletter, give us feedback. How did you enjoy this episode? Was there questions that I should have asked Rodney? Give us some feedback because, again, we want to mold this to what you're looking for. And then finally, continue to follow us on our social channels of X, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guests, the one and only, the co-founder of Barbara Jean Productions, Rodney Brown Jr., I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We laughed about it. We learned about it. We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.